This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Al Campbell. Al Campbell is the Vice President of Operations of Regional Medical Center, a great leader, a great person. Al, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Thank you, Scott. Well, a pleasant good afternoon. And first, allow me to thank you for the opportunity to join you on the podcast today. As I shared earlier, I'm currently the Vice President of Operations for the Regional Medical Center. And in this role, I lead components of the enterprise's clinical and non-clinical areas, along with our cancer service line and home care division. Previous to this, I have worked in a number of acute care hospitals across the Mid-Atlantic region, leading operations and quality. And glad to be here with you on today, Scott.
Thank you so much. And Al, when you think about this year, what are your top two or three goals this year?
Sure. So there are a couple. And one is really continuing to drive our strategy with a focus on expanding and creating service lines that result in the best accessible and safe quality care for our patients within our organization. A second one is certainly no secret. A number of hospital organizations are seeing it across the country, and that's with the increase of gun violence that we're seeing across the country, reaching the front doors of our hospitals. A top priority for me is really ensuring that our organization is providing a safe environment for our employees and patients without creating barriers to access in care or the community itself. And I would say a third goal is personal for me, and it's really being able to consistently identify ways to connect minority healthcare professionals and thought leaders while creating opportunities for us to be able to have conversations about diversity and the importance of African Americans, and particularly having a seat at the table in the C-suite.
Talk to me about this. The last goal that you mentioned, which I know is the last goal that you mentioned, but a very important goal to you and to a lot of people. What are the kinds of things that you see in terms of improving the situation, the positions, the diversity, the chances for minority healthcare executives to lead? You've got some magnificent leaders leading systems, people like Bernard Tyson, Kevin Lofton, Lloyd Dean, all people of color leading some of those prestigious organizations in the country. How do you keep on doubling down on that and improving those opportunities for African Americans in healthcare?
Mm-hmm. We have to be intentional. We have to be really intentional in our approach. We have to be intentional in ensuring that it's embedded as a part of our organizational goals to really reach back and bring up-and-comers to the table so that they have opportunities to experience what they can achieve in becoming leaders within respective organizations. I think another key point for us is really to ensure that we have diverse candidates that really represent the communities that we serve, and really having chief diversity officers and diversity and inclusion leaders at the table really supporting this initiative is very, very key.
And let me ask you a question about organizations that support these efforts. I've had the privilege, sometimes through yourself, to be at the NAHSE and in front of hundreds of minority executives. And I'm always struck by the warmth and positive embrace of the community, the strength of the community, the interest in seeing each other within the community succeed and thrive. How important is that community towards improving these opportunities and providing pathways for opportunities?
They're very important, Scott, I would say. The National Association of Health Services Executives does an exceptional job at really creating a safe space for Black healthcare executives to have the conversation about diversity, to have the conversation about some of the obstacles, the barriers, opportunities that we see and we experience on an ongoing basis. And then really creating that network so that we can continue to not only provide opportunities, but then to really reach back and bring students and up-and-coming professionals behind us as well. And I think there are a lot of other organizations that do a really, really good job at really embracing diversity of minorities. But within NASI, it really creates that safe space for us to be able to support one another, to grow, and to get the different perspectives that we are seeing across the country as well.
I see across the country more and more great minority leaders in leadership positions. And at the same time, I know that the stats are daunting. How far is that path to get to where you feel like there's been great strides made? Where do we have to get to really improve the situation overall for diversity in healthcare, minorities in healthcare?
It is a lengthy road ahead of us, is what I will say. We see in our organizations, some larger organizations, some mid-sized organizations, and smaller organizations, where you have the role of the chief diversity and inclusion officer, but many of those leaders do not have a seat at the top level positions within the C-suite as true decision makers. So really, with organizations embracing the role of the chief diversity and inclusion officers and being intentional in embedding it into our strategic plans and growth strategies, it will get there in time. But right now, we certainly do have a lot of opportunities for us to continue to focus on it.
And there's that constant need to be included, not just by title, but in every discussion, but that the person of color, the person, the leader of any type of ethnic group or relationship, is fully included. That they're fully part of the conversation and leadership, and it's a very intentional effort to get there. And a different topic, Al. You're a great leader, a great executive. I always find you to be very thoughtful and a pleasure to visit with. How do you keep yourself motivated? How do you keep yourself sort of at it day in, day out, year in, year out? I know you deal with lots of emergencies, but how do you keep yourself just excited and going every day, all the time?
You know what I'll say, Scott? It's always a privilege and an honor for me to be able to serve the communities that we do. I can remember growing up in a town where there was only one hospital, and it happened to be the largest employer in the community. That hospital ended up closing, and that diverse community lost not only an employer, but a major access point to care. So for me, it's personal. When I walk through the halls of the hospital every day, I strive to do all that I can do to not only ensure that we provide good access to care, but we remain a viable employer to members of the community. And I'm really motivated when I see smiling faces from our employees and visitors in the halls. And I'll say that no 2 days are ever the same, or they're always peachy, but it makes it all worth the while when you see the fruits of your labor in the small things and the strategic wins in the organization. What I'll additionally say, it's really, really important for us to create a work-life balance. We've heard it, and it's certainly no secret, as minorities, we always say we have to work 10 times harder to really prove ourselves. But while we're also proving ourselves, it's really, really important for us to know when it's time to step away and to just have an out-of-the-office experience. Understanding at the same time, it's okay that the organization will still be there when we return, but it's important for us to have that mental break, be able to push that reset button, and coming back energized and ready to pick up where we left off. So those are the things that really help me to stay motivated and wanting to run every day to work to do a good job.
Let me talk to you about another issue that you raised, and thank you. You talked about an issue of gun violence in hospitals and safety. I mean, it must be sort of amazing to see that was an issue that was a serious issue in hospitals in inner cities 20 years ago. And then you didn't hear very much about it for the last 15 years. Now, the last few years, it is, again, a subject that is front and center. How did that happen, and what do you do about that as a hospital leader to try and lessen the risk of gun violence?
One of the areas that organizations are continuing to really place concentrated focus is on the mental health population. These patients, it's mental health is a service line, and we have to treat our mental health patients just as we would any other service line. And we have to really ensure that we're meeting their needs, but then at the same time also really understanding that a hospital is not a place that is immune from violence taking place. It's coming to our front doors. It's happening within the communities. So we have to put measures in place, such as armed officers, such as metal detectors, wanding of persons that may come in under suspicion, to ensure that we're creating a safe environment. But we want to do that in a way and in a manner that we're not profiling people, while at the same time ensuring that we're still having a safe environment and not putting up too many barriers. But it's a balancing act. Do you want to have your place on lockdown as Fort Knox, or do you want to ensure that it's a safe environment, it's a welcoming environment, because we want to create the best experience for our patients overall?
It's like all these things. You could be completely safe on cybersecurity if you had no computers.
Right.
You could be completely safe on this issue of violence if you had no patients or people. But it's not possible. So it's constantly trying to hit these balances on it.
Very true.
So another question. Your best advice for CEOs and leaders?
Well, what I'll say is I haven't been a CEO as yet, but as a leader, my best advice would be for any executive to remain engaged. Oftentimes, we operate at a high altitude, but it's also really important for us as leaders to have engagement and relationships at all levels of the organizations that we serve. Sometimes as leaders, we really have to ensure that we're getting involved in activities that we wouldn't necessarily get involved in, some of the cookouts, the picnics, things of that nature. But we really have to ensure that we're humanizing the role of the leader. And that's really, really key. It's sometimes difficult when frontline staff see the suits coming down the hallway. They tend to shy away and go in the other direction. But we have to be able to be intentional as to how we humanize that role and that we are approachable. Because they are the face of our organization, and we want our frontline staff to be able to say that they believe our leaders are doing everything that we can to keep the environment safe and to really drive the best outcomes and a safe environment.
In that connectivity between the top and everybody else, leadership and the rest of the team has so many great benefits in terms of how consumers are served, patients are served, their families are served, and just overall retention as well. I mean, people are much more likely to stay at a place where they feel like that people care about them. And so important. And then, Al, what's a bad idea for leaders? What do you see leaders sometimes do that you think is just a bad idea?
You know, a bad idea, I believe, would be for a leader not to engage their medical staff and board in decision-making. To operate in an insular environment as a leader is non-productive for the team. And it's also really counterproductive to the organization driving success. Success from growth, success from your strategies, and success from revenue when you isolate in that insular type of box. That's a bad idea in itself. And it can be career suicide as well.
That silo concept, we're in a silo, we're in a foxhole, we're just looking at it our way, and we're not taking into account other thoughts, either that might be better thoughts or that might be just as important for building consensus to get people to actually do what needs to be done. Well, they're not going to want to do it unless they're part of the team too. So this concept of silos, of really getting into your own situation and not being parts of teams is a bad idea. Yeah, let me do this. We're about to wrap up. Anything else that you'd like to share with the audience? I mean, you talked about sort of three big goals, improving operations, improving service lines. That's sort of one. You talked about this concept of gun violence, safety in the hospitals become a bigger and bigger an issue and just a very important issue. And third, you talked about greater opportunities for minorities in healthcare. I want to thank you for joining us. Is there anything else you'd like to add today?
You know, Scott, I thank you for the opportunity, and I continue to appreciate the way that you're intentional in really supporting diversity and inclusion at all levels of organizations and cross functions, and really appreciate your partnership. So thank you on today.
Thank you. We are a huge fan of yours. We're a huge fan of the NAHSE, just a magnificent organization, and also very impressed with some of the other work that's done in healthcare by magnificent people to try and improve diversity. So for me, it's just it's a privilege to get a chance to visit with you and to work with the NAHSE. I view it as nothing more than just a great privilege. So thank you. Thank you for joining us today, Al. You're just great. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Scott. You take care.